broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at Surrey Farms. .com or virginiatraditions.com.
Hi everybody. You're tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money. Making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and my co-host, Andrew Invisible Newman, isn't here. But we have our reliable producer, Jack Inslee, and the uninvisible Carlos
He's with us this week.
Yay! All right. Who needs Andrew? There we go. And as you all know, but I'll tell you again, we broadcast every Thursday live. And if you can't tune in while we're streaming live, all our episodes are archived on the website or our podcast is available for download. We would love to hear from you while we're streaming live. Our phone lines are open. It is 718-497-2128. So call us, 497-2128. Today, we continue the discussion about the occupation. We have a very special guest today. We have Professor Jeff Makowski. Did I do it good?
Close enough.
How was? Tell us the real... I'm going to call you
Makowski.
Makowski. All right. Makowski. Got to have a complicated, tough name. Okay.
I try.
He is a professor of urban studies and anthropology from Queens College, which is part of the CUNY system. My alma mater, the CUNY system.
Right on.
Okay. And he's going to talk to us. Our topic today is the occupiers versus Bloomberg. And the fires are really heating up with Bloomberg and the politicians in the city. Well, not the politicians, Bloomberg and the police, I would say. The occupation is continuing. It's growing stronger every day. I am, as you all know, I am volunteering some accounting services there. So I am working with the occupation, and we're doing very well on that end. And now we're going to find out. Well, let's just talk about the latest news today. Jeff, we both know that Mayor Bloomberg plans on cleaning up Zuccotti Park tomorrow. And for the listeners, Zuccotti Park is where the occupation is taking place. So just cleaning it up. I've been there. Have you been there?
Yes.
Gone to visit. It's not very dirty.
No.
Not dirty. So, look who came in. Invisible Andrew. Say hello, Andrew.
Talking. Keep talking.
Okay. He's cleaning it up because for hygiene. I ain't buying it. What are you thinking?
Well, first, Flash, thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, it's great to have you.
I think you have. There's something to what you just said. I think, framing the legitimacy of the occupation of Wall Street based upon issues of disruption and cleanliness and hygiene is detracting from the larger questions about why people are there and what the actual issues are. And I think the mayor is trying to make this and define this occupation about around issues of practicality and hygiene,
right,
instead of around economic policy for the city and for the country.
Have they allotted a separate space for the folks if they do clean it up?
Well,
I shouldn't have air quoted that, but if they do actually clean it up, do they have somewhere else that they can go? Or?
Oh, I don't think that's in the plan.
Well, I think the plan now, at least as far as we've read in the news today, is that the mayor is saying that he's not going to displace the protesters, but he's going to remove them or clean the park
parts. He's helping.
He's going to clean it in parts, but then it seems very unlikely that people will be able to return with the same...
Right.
In the same way that they
The occupation will change.
Now. Yeah.
The occupation will change. We don't know what the change would be. Nobody knows what the change will be. Maybe Bloomberg has a plan.
Well, for example, they may not be able to return with sleeping bags.
Yeah. Right. And that, I think we all are aware of it. I mean, all the public and the occupiers. I spoke to an occupier today about this. And, of course, you know, they know the underlying motive is certainly not hygiene because it's not even dirty. I mean, it's issues. It's got thousands of people there every day. It's not, you know, spick and span, but it's certainly not dirty. And they have set up mops and brooms and even rat traps and other things that, you know, it's part of life.
Wait, there are rats in New York City?
Oh.
Well, look, I mean, there's a long history in the United States of politicians claiming that people who don't agree with them are dirty and unhygienic.
Yeah, of course.
Right? I mean, this is a very common political strategy on the part of political leaders to discredit people for their and to distract from their message. So I think this is just an old way of handling protest. And I think we shouldn't buy into this and we should kind of keep focusing on what the actual issues are and what the reasons for the occupation are
in the first place. It's the fact that he can displace these people at his will or whim and say, you know, I have to clean it. You've been here too long.
Yeah.
They don't have a permit.
But let's talk about, okay, I'm sorry. Let's talk about, Jeff, why don't you tell us your take on, Mayor Bloomberg's position. We know he's saying one thing, but he ain't really believing what he's saying. He's telling us the protesters have a right to do this and everything is cool. Tell us what you think he has with them.
Well, I think throughout Mayor Bloomberg's
tenure
as mayor, he's had a problem confusing the narrow interests of Wall Street with the interests of all New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. He has consistently said that what's good for Wall Street is good for the city, when in fact, that is often not the case. There's a lot of reasons that what's good for Wall Street is actually not what's good for large numbers of other people who live in New York City.
Well, give me an example of that. What would Wall Street do that benefits and hurts the rest of us?
Well, for example, Wall Street, to organize New York City's economy on a large scale around Wall Street is a very dangerous gambit, because Wall Street, financial services are a very volatile sector of the economy.
Yes.
They rise and they fall much more quickly. There's boom and then there's bust, boom and there's bust, much more quickly than in other sectors, for example, manufacturing or other kinds
of
services.
They're more stable.
Colleges,
and it's a much
smaller
portion of our overall economy as well.
Oh, no. It's quite large. It's 25%.
It's a large segment.
Are you talking about tax base or income base, or are you talking about the actual people employed?
Well, I could talk about revenue. It generates about 25%
of our revenue. Revenue base, yes. But
The point that I was going to
make is that, you know, by having Wall Street be so important in the economy and by implementing policies, which the Bloomberg administration does, that help Wall Street and neglect other sectors of the economy.
What kind of policies?
Well, he's done all kinds of things to help Wall Street. Actually, before him, it was even worse. There were lots of tax abatements that were given.
Right, tax credits for Giuliani, yes.
But he continues to do things that support Wall Street and all levels of government.
Yes.
And by doing that, you know, he's kind of pre-reproducing a system in which there's going to be constant fiscal crisis in the city and constant problems because we're not building a sustainable economy for the city. And I think what happened in 2008 is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. There's a financial crisis, and what happens to the city? You know, the city's revenue shrinks, and then thousands of teachers are laid off.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens when you put Wall Street's interests first, and you don't think of the broader implications of placing financial services.
It's creating a dichotomy within our own city, is what you're saying.
Yes, I think that it widens the gap between the rich and everybody
else. Oh, for sure.
I saw a stat that over like the last 30 years, Wall Street's income has increased from 2-1 to like 5-1 compared to everyone else other than financial.
Yes.
And it's just like with that kind of growth in their income and the stagnation of the rest of the city's economy, like how is it just creates this rift. And to actually, if he's correct in saying that he's actually placating towards these individuals, like, how is that beneficial for the overall city? If they keep making more money, everyone else stays the same. It just creates a rift. And then where you get to situations like we're in now. And I'm just frustrated. Just wanted to throw my 2 cents in there.
Well, it's true. The difference between the bankers and the rest of the employees in the city. It's getting, the gap is getting larger and larger.
Well, I would go farther than that to say that there's a connection between the capacity of people on Wall Street to make enormous sums of money and the rest of us not being able to do so.
Right. Mm-hmm. We don't we don't even have an opportunity for that kind of money.
Right.
Yeah. But in fairness, I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm not a fan of Bloomberg's. In fairness, he did something somewhat similar to the film industry. He allowed them to come in. He gave them credits and he promoted their industry. So, you know, he's not a single industry kind of guy. He did do that for the film industry, and he does do some things for the tourism industry. True?
Yes.
Is he a friend of those industries?
He's a friend to a lot of other industries.
Bloomberg, definitely. The city of New York, first of all, the city of New York is not Mayor Bloomberg himself. No. There's a lot of different...
Oh, no? I thought that was the case.
But
he changed the rules so he can run the third time, which was outrageous.
Right, but one thing I think that you have to think about when you think about Bloomberg is that what his vision of the city is and how he promotes that vision and who benefits from it. And Bloomberg's been very explicit about saying that what he wants New York to be is a luxury city. He doesn't want it to be like Walmart. He wants it to be like a luxury boutique.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And if you think about who benefits from the city being a luxury
not
boutique.
Who can afford that is the question.
Exactly.
Yes.
He does.
Him and his friends.
Yeah. So he does things.
The 1%.
The 1% do really nicely. I mean, they love the idea of the city as a luxury boutique where you could go from town car
to restaurant, to opera, to theater,
which, by the way, I think every New Yorker would love
Of course, if it was affordable.
Right, but unfortunately, when you implement economic policies on a citywide scale that really promote this kind of luxury lifestyle, there's other people who are left out of it. And that actually is a majority of
the
citizens of the city.
That's us 99%, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the problem is also a lot of people are coming to the city as well. A lot of people are infusing into the city and we're spreading
moving
out.
Moving here, you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah,
yeah. From all around the world.
People are becoming more metropolitan across the country. It's a common fact. And now, as we grow, I don't think he's actually making adjustments to these new people coming into the city. And the city is spreading and the poor are moving farther away. And soon enough, there's not going to be anyone who can afford to live here and provide the support services that he needs in order to make this luxury city a possibility.
Well, I think that's his fantasy, actually, is that, you know, the only people in New York
are rich people, or the people who live in the projects that he can't.
And then I think he tried to come up with some way that we could bus in like new immigrant populations to work low end jobs without health insurance. I mean, that's kind of unfortunately that's kind of like the actual plan on some level.
Oh. It's
to create a city in
it's
which
it's amazing to see it working.
There's a really economic segregation going on. You know, geographical segregation as well as kind of social segregation.
Okay, but now we know that the occupiers have pointed that out to Bloomberg and the rest of the world. So now what is he going to do with these occupiers? What are his options? Because I know he says one thing, but really I know he's lying. He just hates this whole thing. He would just like to shoot them with rubber bullets.
Well, he's made clear he hates them.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, rarely does a mayor express this much contempt to people who are engaged in protests.
But
he's gone out of his way to be contemptuous.
Well, he is that 1%. Like, most other mayors aren't in the place he's in he earns $1 a year.
Yeah.
Like, most people need the money that they...
No, he earns $1 a year from the city.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, as the mayor.
Right.
No, but wait a second.
That was an amazing coup, by the way, to, like, take over the city that you, like, run your business out of and all your friends are in and be like, hey, let's hang out. I got this. I'm going to run this and make sure we're protected and clean everything up and make everything what he wants it to be. I never thought of that.
Well, that's brilliant. I'm glad you finally it took you almost 11 or 12 years
to
figure
that
out. No. But I thought that Bloomberg did do a pretty good job as a city manager. I got to give him some credit. I got pissed off when he ran for the third term. But now let's talk about the occupation. I'm missing something. I didn't hear the disdain and the anger towards him. I'm like, I thought I heard him say, well, they have a right to do that. I understand why they're doing it. Did I miss it? Or was that Obama who said that and not Bloomberg? Help me out with
this. I think Bloomberg has said that, of course, he supports the right for free speech. But I think he's also made a series of very contemptuous comments about he doesn't know what they're doing. He thinks it's pointless. He doesn't understand why they're going to the Upper East Side to follow around rich people.
He doesn't understand that?
No, he thinks that he's kind of exasperated and trying to say that he's trying to kind of use, as he's been towards other groups of people, he's a very condescending mayor. He's kind of trying to say, this doesn't really make any sense. It's not worth you paying attention to.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've tried that with all the media, too. So we're going to come back in a minute, and we're going to continue the discussion about Bloomberg and the occupation. All right. We'll be right back. We're back. Flash Talks Cash. We're Professor Jeff
Moskovsky.
Thank you, Jeff. And the invisible Andrew Newman, who's now...
I was like 2 minutes late.
2 minutes is too long.
No, all it right. wasn't. You're
we're
doing
talking
your intro.
About
Come on
the
now,
Occupiers
Flasher.
Versus Bloomberg. We have an occupier in the studio, and she's smiling, so she must have had a good time there. And we're going to continue the discussion because, frankly, I don't understand how Bloomberg is actually containing himself. Like, I think he used the police in the beginning. Did he use the police to do his dirty work at first, you think? What do you think?
Well, he certainly, I think what we see happening is in this protest right now is what you see in a lot of different kinds of protests, where the mayor is on a certain level testing the fortitude of the protesters. He's trying to see just how serious they are and how passionately they care about this issue. So he sends the police out. There's a little bit of police harassment on the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, during a march. And he sees whether this is going to – what kind of reaction. Are they going to go away? Are they going to disappear? Or are they serious? They're now about to face another very, very significant challenge, which is the mayor has declared his intentions to clean the park.
Yes.
And it's unclear what the reaction is going to be. Is this going to be an opportunity for the mayor to just kind of try to push – to kind of stop this, or will people react by kind of finding a new way to stay in the park, or will they find other means of continuing their protest?
The scary
message?
Part is to me is if they do actually get them out of the park, then the cops can arrest them if they're still standing around and not in their designated zone, blocking traffic, blocking pedestrians, doing things that they're not allowed to do, hence illegal. I spoke to a cop who was like, "These people are menaces. They're blocking people from getting to work. They're blocking traffic. We have to arrest them at that point because they're doing illegal things.
Right. I mean, this is a very important point because if you actually think about it, one has to ask if a social group in New York City right now really fundamentally disagrees with what's going on, where can they go to express themselves if everywhere you go is potentially disturbing or disrupting business as usual as the mayor and the city define it. It has a very chilling effect on protest if literally there's no space in the city except maybe, you know, out in Queens somewhere where no one's listening.
Like Flushing Meadow Park or something next to Citi Field where no one's going to be there. They're like, you can have the parking lot right. for a couple of weeks. Go ahead.
But traditionally, you know, protesters go to the important symbolic locations where injustice is happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wall Street is an excellent and legitimate target yep. for protest That's under right. these times. And, of course, this is why the mayor and the 1% in Wall Street don't want them there. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use all kinds of tactics and excuses to try to remove them because that, once again, prevents them, I think, from having to address the real of social course. Inequalities that are just, being brought to their attention.
Yeah, they just try to...
And they want to distract the public exactly. from actually focusing on those
issues. What these people are saying. Yes,
issues.
Of course. Yeah, it's a control policy. That's all right. it really is.
Yeah,
it's
but I'm really very concerned because we know in the past, in my life when I've seen it, is unfortunately sometimes these standoffs can become very dangerous and deadly. Tiananmen Square, is that the right word? How to say
Tiananmen.
Tiananmen Square. And Kent State... Those were two places where the protesters said, you know.
Well, that was a little.
Kent
State. Well, Tiananmen Square is different. That's communist regime going in and saying stop protesting.
But they
do whatever they want. That's totally different than what we're talking about here.
Joanne,
come on. That's okay. comparing apples to oranges.
Okay.
You want to compare it to Kent State, where the National Guard went in and started shooting students?
Right.
That's what maybe a similar situation. But we haven't seen anything like that really since. That time we haven't seen any
well,
protesting.
Actually, we've seen an enormous amount of political and repression against dissenters in the United States.
No, but I'm
over the last 40 or 50 years, well beyond Kent State. I mean, that's
violence.
We've seen all kinds of. I mean, we've seen protesters who were protesting the Republican National Conventions and in New York and Philadelphia being arrested
right.
preemptively,
but not killed, not shot.
No.
Okay.
But we've seen a huge amount of violence in COINTELPRO and other programs against black revolutionaries in this country. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's actually quite a long history of violence perpetrated by government against
But actual murder
is
what
I'm talking about shooting.
I'm talking about actual murders.
Well, I don't think we're reaching that level here at this protest.
Well, I don't know.
If anything, it'll be rubber bullets.
The World Trade Organization of the World Trade Conference back in like 99 is something that comes to mind where they had large demonstrations of these people with the similar.
Was that the one in Seattle?
Yes.
Yes.
Where they, it's similar. It's a similar ideals
setup,
that
right.
were unions were coming down and individuals were out protesting the economic policies of this
right.
country. And they went at them with pepper spray, bullets and everything else.
Well, there are moments when this happens. And I think, you know, I think what this demonstrates on the other side of this is just how brave people are.
Mm-hmm.
To act on their convictions and to go out there and put themselves out there when there is no real guarantee that the protesters are going to be treated within the letter of the law or even, you know, well, because there's, you know, there are repressive repercussions mm-hmm. sometimes for putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think, you know, we don't want to like overstate the threat of violence at this point because that's also part of the way of quelling dissent, right,
have,
is to make everybody afraid that they're going to become subjected
right.
to state violence. When in fact, right now, there's a great deal of media attention. The actual instances of police harassment have been brought to the attention of the media
right.
and the public.
Right.
So there's actually quite a bit of momentum behind and a lot of public support for protecting the protesters.
Mm-hmm.
There's an enormous, I think, amount of public empathy for the people who are occupying Wall Street.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the mayor and the police act, you know, to their act in their, you know, it's a really big problem for going to be a big problem for them if they do anything that it will threaten the protesters in any sort of significant way, because people, they know that these protesters, whatever number they are, represent the point of view of large numbers of people, perhaps the
majority,
the vast majority
of Americans today.
Right.
But the other side of it is, you know, it could go that way or it could go the other way where it could wind up where the cops and Mayor Bloomberg tomorrow do something, and I don't know, you know, we could never predict, and it strengthens the protests
resolve.
Even more,
mm-hmm.
and on Saturday, they can come out and have even greater media attention and support because XYZ happened just tomorrow, you know. So
let's be clear, this movement, which is very important for the United States and the world.
Yes.
It's not the only movement in the world that's important, but it's an important one,
right.
is going to have to dig deep, and it's going to have to be able to sustain all kinds of challenges.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And today's announcement by the mayor about what he plans to do is just the latest, but it's going to take a long time, and there's going to be a lot. We have to take a little bit of a long term view and a short term view. I mean, I think everyone right now is very concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow, and I think we also take a long term view, which is that, you know, there before this there was what happened in Wisconsin that motivated people to do this, you know, and what happened in Egypt. You know, there's a lot of things that are happening right now, and that there's going to be more after this.
Sure.
Well, it's growing. It's in, what, Denver, D.C.?
It's all around the country.
Everywhere now.
I think October 15th is supposed to go worldwide, so it's going to foreign cities on Saturday.
What I don't understand is, you mentioned Egypt and Wisconsin, where the police were on the side of the protesters, because they're the ones who are being represented by these individuals. They're the unions, they're the working class people, and they're trying to help the police. In this instance, it's not like that. And
we don't really know yet just exactly where things are on that front.
Yeah, I know. It's just it's weird. 3 weeks in, 4 weeks in, whatever we are at this point, it's the fact that there haven't been any police like saying, go ahead, or standing up and coming out and saying,
We're behind you.
This is wrong.
On the other hand, I would just like to point out what an enormous accomplishment it is for these protesters to have been occupying that park for 4 weeks.
Yes.
That's an enormous, enormous accomplishment. Right. They could have been removed a day after they began the occupation. And the fact that they were not should not be ignored. This is a huge, huge triumph and an accomplishment.
Right.
And on some level, like, the police's response is somewhat muted, and we have to accept that, like, there's I'm not giving them credit, but what I'm suggesting is that there's some reluctance on the part of parts of
the police
city government right now in the political system, even maybe with Bloomberg himself, to really crack down on this right now.
Well, you said in the presidential thing too, where a lot of people are backtracking on their support or condemnation of the Occupy Wall Street. Even on the Republican side, they've been backtracking a little bit with saying, I don't know.
I think the Democrats are signing on left and right now.
Well, they have to.
The only one that would really make one person would really make a huge, huge improvement in this whole thing would be if Obama showed up. And I've said it before.
Well, you know, I have to say, I don't think anybody who's in that movement, as I understand it, is waiting for Obama.
No, they're not waiting. But
I don't think they want him to lead them. No. I think they want to establish
I think
their
it's
own.
A bad move, because then it makes it look like it's an Obama movement rather than an actual bipartisan, independent, totally.
It is, right. No,
and that's the wrong move. I think Obama showing up will just put a label on it. The Republicans can attack it and create dichotomy within the group itself.
Really quickly, I just had a question. I wonder how many of the occupiers supported the jobs bill, read the jobs bill, what they think of the jobs bill. I haven't heard it mentioned at all during the protests, and I thought that was interesting.
I would imagine. I mean, I can't speak for people who are down there, but I would imagine, first of all, that there's a variety of opinions about the job bill amongst people who are involved in this at the moment. But I would say that people probably think that things like the job bill are fine, but they have from what I've seen, they have a much more significant critique of the way that the United States economy is running, and they really are looking for much more fundamental change to bring about a fair economy.
Not just covering it up with, oh yeah, we got jobs again for you. Actually going to the core and creating more control
Right, but to put political pressure on them and get some of those taxes through to the top 1%, I mean, that's a start, no?
I don't think that's where they're going.
No.
I think that they're thinking much bigger than that.
Just taxing them is not the place.
The jobs bill is designed, by the way, to revive the economy on a very narrow bandwidth. Yes. It's not designed necessarily to redistribute wealth in the economy. And this group of people seems much more interested in attacking the issue of wealth redistribution than it is in the issue of restimulating
and
the
regulations
economy.
Because
we've already seen that the economy can, in some level, be restored, but not in a way that necessarily is fair to all.
Mm-hmm. I also see them completely disappointed and turned off by the Democratic Republican process.
Yes.
And they know that it's not working. It hasn't worked in a long time.
The whole political process.
Right. So, that jobs thing is all part of that whole picture down in D.C., which hasn't worked.
I think
anything.
The filibuster and the fact that nothing happened for, what, 2-3 weeks. They talk about it.
Yes,
nothing happens. They vote 50-50. Who cares? They need 60 now. So
anywhere.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
And that's the idea that everyone has a problem with. It's not the actual
economy.
I
think that's one of the reasons that there's so much popular resonance with the Occupy Wall Street movement, because the idea that I think large numbers of people in this country have become somewhat cynical about both parties and their capacity to actually think about what's best for the 99% of the people who live here. And so they're going to have to be pressuring, I think, both parties to rethink their priorities.
I think the whole political process needs to be revamped. I don't think we want to start completely over and start re-sign a constitution and everything like that, but scaling down the government and creating more states' rights and things like that, where people actually are represented by the individuals that they elect for their state. And I'm more of a states' rights person because it's more local and more the people who are in the place.
Hands-on.
And the federal government's becoming too bureaucratic, too slow, too cumbersome that it doesn't actually get anything done.
You know, I'm not sure that that's actually true. I have to disagree with you on that. I think that there's a mythology that that's the case, but I'm not so sure that the federal government is any less competent than state governments or local governments, which can be just as corrupt and just as inefficient and just as slow. In fact, the federal government actually has a track record of accomplishing enormous amounts of things for people. It's just that those things have not been talked about in fair terms because of the political
nonsense
that's going on.
Right.
I just think the large scale of our country creates too many different factions and groups where to get anything passed through a federal government, it's going to be longer process, adding on little things that don't need to be put onto a bill, and to get actually...
All of that doesn't work anymore.
Well,
that
none
whole
of it
process
works.
Doesn't
what,
work
I,
anymore.
None of it works.
Well, this is a whole topic for a
that's,
whole other
yeah,
show.
Yeah, that's another one. But I want to say goodbye to everybody. I want to thank Professor Jeff...
Moskovsky
and Andrew for coming on and talking to us about the occupation, and we'll talk about what happens from now till next week. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following message has been brought to you by Taste Brooklyn. Our city's finest chefs partner with farmers and local vineyards next to the Green Market for an extraordinary outdoor culinary festival. Try exquisite delicacies using locally grown seasonal delights on the plaza outside Brooklyn's Borough Hall. Top chefs and artisans will offer sumptuous fare paired with premium wines, all to empower our neediest children to get healthy. The mighty FDNY and DSNY harbor their own culinary masters in uniform. They will cook off against the pros. Sample delicious cuisine without stressing over a reservation while supporting a worthy cause. Taste Brooklyn's Feel to Fork Outdoor Culinary Festival, Saturday, October 15th, 2011, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn more and buy tickets at tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. That's TASTESOF Brooklyn.blogspot.com.